father's letter again after dinner, and Lindy was in a bad mood all evening. Unfortunately, that's all too common these days. When I tried to find out what was troubling her, she screamed at me that the divorce was all my fault. I was the one who wanted it. I was the one who'd ruined our family. Her accusations shocked me. I didn't defend myself, and I didn't enlighten her either. For reasons I've never understood, she's always been close to Buck. Of all my children, she's the one who found our divorce the most difficult to accept. I left her sobbing pitifully in her room, and then later went back to try to reason with her. That was a mistake. She threw coal in my face, telling me how wrong it is for me to have another man in my life. She as good as threatened me. My daughter, blood of my blood, heart of my heart, said that if I married Cole, she'd make sure our lives were a living hell. I have no intention of marrying Cole. But her words shook me. I refuse to allow a child, a girl who hasn't even turned 13, to dictate how I live my life. Despite that, I've been giving my relationship with Cole a lot of thought. We've written and he's called several times. Although the conversations have always been short, but we haven't had a chance to meet. We both know that given the opportunity, we could so easily let ourselves fall in love. It's premature to even think about this, but I know I'd be tempted if he asked me to marry him. However, that's not likely to happen. Cole's already married, to his career. Not only that, I'm coming into this relationship with 4 needy children. David's already a teenager, and Lindy might as well be. This daughter of mine is full of attitude, all of it bad. God help me. Dougie and Christopher aren't far behind. I no longer know what's right. I shouldn't be making decisions for Cole, but I don't want this to go any further. The minute we see each other again, I'll convince myself we could make it work, and we can't. I know that already, even if Cole doesn't. In any event, my one experience of marriage has left me doubting myself and doubting my ability to make the right choice. Buck seems so genuine these days, but then he always does when he's afraid he's going to lose me for good. I'll never forgive him if he builds up the children's hopes and then doesn't follow through on his promises. I've seen him do that countless times. If I could protect the children, I would. But he's their father, and they love him and need him. One way and another, the subject of marriage is definitely on my mind. A wedding announcement arrived in the mail, along with Buck's letter to the kids. Roy Kloster. He's married now, to another doctor. I'm pleased for him, and equally pleased that he considers me enough of a friend to send an announcement. I'm grateful to be in school. I love every minute of it. I gave up my dream of being a nurse 14 years ago, and I'm not going to let anything destroy it a second time. Dr. Milton and his staff have been wonderfully supportive. Dr. Milton's promised me a full-time position with his office once I graduate. His wife's been working with him for years and wants to quit. They're counting on me to step into that vacancy. I may never find love or romance again, but I'll have a fulfilling career. I've got my friends, my family, and finally, a healthy measure of self-respect. Cole Greenberg, ABC News Network, 7 West 66th Street, New York, New York, 10023. November 5th, 1980. Dear Leslie, I haven't heard from you in a couple of weeks and wasn't sure if the mail had been delayed or if there was some other reason. That's why I phoned. When we spoke, I heard the hesitation in your voice. You don't need to explain or apologize. Getting your letters and talking to you, however briefly, while I was in Tehran has lifted my spirits immensely. It's made these long months reporting on the hostage situation more bearable. You didn't say why you don't think it's a good idea to continue this relationship, but I suspect I know. You're looking for someone who can be a father to your children and a husband to you. I don't blame you for that. I have to be upfront with you, Leslie. I doubt that I'm husband or father material. My schedule takes me all over the world. I need the freedom to leave at a moment's notice. I'm away so much of the time that relationships just don't seem to work, no matter how hard I try. I realize all this talk of the future is premature, as you said yourself, but you were wise to bring it up. I value your honesty and your willingness to confront this now, before we invest our emotions in a relationship that's headed down a dead-end road. Perhaps the best way to close this letter is to let you know I've enjoyed your friendship these past few months. God bless you, Leslie. I think we could have recaptured what we found in each other that day in Hawaii. The question is, would it have been the best thing for either one of us? You believe it wouldn't, and I suppose you're right. I have my work, and you have your children and the promise of a career. When we first met in 1967, I found you smart and sweet and oh so genuine. I was impressed by your honesty and your wisdom. That hasn't changed. Fondly, C. Greenberg.
December 11th, 1980. Dear Daddy, someone shot John Lennon. I love his music. I'm really bummed, and so are all my friends. School is all right, I guess. David is the brain in the family. Mom doesn't have a boyfriend anymore. Lindy.
1982.
Jillian's Journal. January 1st, 1982. Dearest Nick and Daddy, Happy New Year! Lenny Joe is 3, and Monty and I would very much like to have a second child, but it just doesn't seem to be happening. Medical advancements in infertility are incredible, but they're expensive, time-consuming, and they have a negative effect on my emotions. Monty claims he's content with one child if I am. The problem is, I was raised an only child, and although I appreciate the advantages, I'm also well aware of the disadvantages. I'd so hoped for more children. I envy Leslie her siblings. Even now as adults, they remain close, although Leslie and Mike are the only two who still live in Pine Ridge. At this point, Monty and I have decided to leave the matter of more children in God's hands, and I'm comfortable with that. I couldn't have imagined myself making a statement like this even a year ago. It's the kind of thing Leslie has often said and I've usually ignored. In fact, as I ease into my 30s, I'm more and more comfortable with the subject of God. The anger I felt toward him, her, isn't as strong as it was during my college years. Leslie's never questioned her belief in a supreme being who guides our lives. She's so confident, so secure in her faith. I wish I could be more like her in that regard, but I'm not. As Lenny Jo grows up, I find myself thinking more seriously about attending Mass again. Perhaps I will. That would make you happy, wouldn't it, Daddy? Leslie continues to thrive. Her ex is still in Alaska, although the pipeline work is complete. Buck seems to have a job of sorts, but he isn't making the big money he was a couple of years ago. I don't know exactly what he's doing, and I don't care. Unfortunately, the family's financial welfare still depends on Buck, although that's less and less the case since Leslie will be working full-time by summer. I'm so proud of the way she's managed to keep up with school, her job, and the children's needs. She'll graduate in June, and I'm hoping to surprise her and show up for the ceremony. It's hard to believe David's in high school. What's not hard to believe is the fact that he's getting top grades. He reminds me so much of Leslie at this age. Lindy is just the opposite. I worry about her. Leslie told me at Christmas that her 14-year-old daughter has driven her to her knees in prayer. The two of them are constantly at odds. She's the most like Buck in attitude, and the kid knows exactly what buttons to push to upset Leslie. The guilt one appears to be her favorite, and she uses it frequently. Dougie is now called Doug or Douglas, and he's in junior high. Christopher is nearly 8 and crazy about sports. He's the team's top soccer player and shows real promise as an athlete. No matter how tight her school and work schedule is, Leslie makes an effort to attend his games. Dr. Milton's been very good about allowing her the flexibility to do this. I think Leslie's found herself a wonderful boss. Mom tells me he's a respected OBGYN and is well-liked by the hospital staff. I was disappointed when Leslie broke off the relationship with Cole Greenberg. Apparently it was a mutual decision, but Leslie hasn't really said much about it. I suspect she's in love with Cole, but couldn't see involving him in her life with 4 children and their constant demands. I wish I knew what she was thinking. I'd write Cole myself if I could be assured Leslie would speak to me again.
She'd consider that a betrayal, and I would never do anything to threaten our friendship. The best news has to do with Monty. He's leaving the Justice Department and interviewing with several firms. It'll be nice to have a husband again. I swear he's nearly worked himself to death. I still hate leaving Lenny Joe every day, but I enjoy my job, too. Law is exciting work. It seems that I read about a landmark case at least once a week. I'd love to have been in court when Lee Marvin was sued for palimony. Actress Carol Burnett's libel suit against the National Enquirer was in the headlines for months. This year, it's going to be the deregulation of AT&T. President Carter opened the door when he deregulated the airlines. While I enjoy the challenge of being an attorney, I love being a wife and mother, too. It's finding the balance between my job and my role as Monty's wife and Lenny Joe's mother that has proven to be the most difficult. Dad, you'll be reassured to learn that Mom is doing very well. She's grown accustomed to living alone and seems emotionally stronger with every year. I'm proud of her, and I know you would be, too. She's handling her own financial affairs now. I check the numbers every 3 or 4 months, and so far, everything looks great. She's willing to travel alone, too. You can thank Lenny Joe for that. These days, Mom hops on a flight to New York with barely a pause. I can remember when she wouldn't dream of calling a cab on her own, let alone navigating her way around an airport. Jim and Angie had a second child last year, Nick. A little girl this time. And you'll be as excited as I was to learn that they named her Nikki Lynn, after you and me. I wept when they told me. We're part of this child, Nick. In her name and in the family stories she'll grow up hearing, I look forward to being her aunt. Jim and I stay in touch, mostly by phone. As Jim is quick to tell me, he isn't much of a letter writer. It's always good to hear his voice. He sees me as a big sister, and I consider it an honor that he would. This is going to be a good year. I can feel it already. Remember how much I love you both. Jillian. We are pleased to announce that Montgomery Gordon has joined the Beckham Law Firm. Montgomery Gordon is available for mediation and arbitration, consultation and legal representation in business, real estate, and civil matters. Beckham, DiGiovanni, Zimmerman, Johnson, and Blaine. 652 Park Avenue, New York, New York, 10021. Parkwest Medical, 284 Central Park West, Suite 1A, New York City, New York, 10024. February 19, 1982. Dear Mr. Gordon, the blood test results are back from your annual physical with Dr. Lyman. Your cholesterol count is 342. Dr. Lyman requests a follow-up appointment. Please contact our office between the hours of 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. to schedule your visit. We look forward to seeing you again soon. Sincerely, Joan McMahon, RN. Leslie Knowles, March 7, 1982. Dear Buck, I'm writing because I'm at my wit's end with Lindy. I simply can't control her. Last Friday night, I happened to check on her and discovered she wasn't in bed. She'd crawled out her bedroom window and didn't return until 4 the next morning. She was pretty surprised to find me sitting in her room when she climbed back in. I have no idea who she was with or where she went. She refuses to answer both questions. Our daughter is only 14 years old. I've restricted her comings and goings and taken away phone privileges, but all that's done is create more friction between us. I don't know how to reach her. Perhaps you can succeed where I've failed. I'd appreciate your trying. Thank you. Leslie. March 9th, 1982. Dear Daddy, Mom is being totally unreasonable and mean. She wouldn't let me phone you, and she's forcing me to stay in my room. This is child abuse. I can't take it anymore. You've got to do something. I can't live with her. David is so perfect. He's gag me perfect. I don't get along with Mom, and I never have. Let me come live with you, all right? I won't be any trouble, I promise. You've got to help me, Dad. You've just got to. Love, Lindy, your only daughter. April 6, 1982. My dearest Monty, if you're wondering why your wife is sending you flowers, think back 2 weeks to our weekend trip to Boston. Can you guess? If you need a further hint, I suggest you schedule time away from the office 8 and a half months from now. There should be maternity leave for fathers. If you don't know a good lawyer who can argue the case, I just might. Hurry home. We have some celebrating to do. Your loving, pregnant wife.
Leslie's Journal, May 6, 1982. I saw Cole on the evening news tonight. He's in Port Stanley on the Falkland Islands, waiting for the approaching British fleet. When I saw him, I felt as if someone had punched me hard. Everything around me started to fade. Thankfully, Christopher was there and brought me a glass of water. My head can't deal with the romantic fantasy I've built in my heart. I'm raising 4 children on my own, and I'm in love with a man I only saw once for a few hours when I was still a teenager. It doesn't make sense to feel this way about him. No man could possibly live up to the cherished memories I have of Cole. I think I've needed that fantasy version more than reality. After being married to Buck all those years, I pictured Cole as the ideal husband and father. Loving, patient, dedicated to his children, and employed. I regret my lack of faith in us both. I spelled out my fears, anticipated all the problems, and made a decision based on my limited experience with men. He accepted that decision, and now it's too late. It wouldn't be right to pop back into his life. It's more than seeing Cole and reliving the grief I brought upon myself that's getting me down. I thought this last year of school would be easier than the previous 4 and a half. I assumed it'd be a downhill slide from this point. I was wrong. The hours are long, the professor's demanding, and I'm so far in debt it'll take me 15 years to pay off the student loans. Lindy's rebellious attitude toward me doesn't help. I don't know what happened between her and Buck. I suspect she asked to move in with him, but he didn't write back, which was an answer in itself. I've never worried that Buck will send for any of the children or want custody. He couldn't be bothered with them while we were married. He certainly isn't going to let one of his children disrupt his lifestyle now. Lindy hasn't mentioned his name in weeks and snarls whenever the boys talk about their dad. But then her reaction to me is much the same. Jillian invited Lindy and me to New York this summer as a graduation gift. She's planning to pay for our tickets, and I just might take her up on this more than generous offer. Mom and Eric have agreed to watch the boys for me. I haven't said anything to Lindy yet for fear of disappointing her if it doesn't work out. First, I've got to get through school. Then and only then will I feel like celebrating. One thing's for sure, I don't want my daughter hanging around the house with nothing to do all summer. That's a guarantee of trouble. David is taking driver's education and is eager to get his license in September. I can't wait. Once he's driving, I won't have to spend as much time taking the 2 younger boys to one sporting event or another. 2 years ago, Buck promised to buy Davy a car. For David's sake and mine, I hope he follows through. But I have serious doubts. Of course, David knows better than to count on anything Buck tells him. Still, hope springs eternal.
May 20th, 1982. Dear Leslie, Bill and I talked it over and wanted to know if you'd agree to send Lindy to us for the summer. With me working full-time at the hospital and Bill putting in long hours at the office, we're concerned about daycare during the last part of June through August. We'd pay for her airplane ticket and give her $5 a day. Get back to me ASAP so we can make other arrangements if we need to. Love, Susan.
June 6, 1982. City of Sitka Jail. 304 Lake Street, Sitka, Alaska. 99835. Dear Leslie, I hate to ask this, but I need a loan. As you can see, I'm in a bit of a jam here. I swear to you, Les, I'll pay you back. On my sister's grave, I'll find a way to get the money to you as soon as possible. This isn't an easy letter to write, but I'm not afraid to admit I need help. If I don't get out of here by Tuesday, I won't be able to fish. If I don't fish, I can't pay child support. Getting me the money will help you and the kids. You know I wouldn't ask if there was any other alternative. Buck. P.S. Wire the money directly to the jail, all right? And listen, I know I'm a few months behind on child support, but I'll make that up as soon as I'm back fishing. The president, faculty, and the graduating class of Seattle University Pine Ridge Extension announced that Leslie L. Knowles,
is a candidate for registered nursing degree at the 51st commencement exercises, Sunday afternoon, June 6th, 1982, at 3 o'clock. A reception will follow the commencement exercises. Leslie Knowles, June 11th, 1982. Dearest Jillian, I can hardly express my delight about seeing you at my graduation. I know I embarrassed myself by bursting into tears right in the middle of pomp and circumstance, but I didn't have a clue you were doing this. To think David knew all along. You really know how to surprise a girl, don't you? If all goes according to plan, Lindy and I will fly out the third week of August. She'll be back from California then, with her babysitting money burning a hole in her pocket. I've always wanted to see New York, and before you suggest it, no, I refuse to contact Cole. I'm so excited about this trip. But are you sure you're going to want company so close to when the baby's due? Let me know if you have any concerns. If you prefer, we could postpone our visit. Thank you for the wonderful, wonderful surprise. You were right when you said back in 1966 that I was college material. It only took me 14 years to prove it. I start working full-time with Dr. Milton immediately. Mrs. Milton is more than ready to have me take her place. Love, Leslie and all. Jillian Lawton Gordon, 331 West End Avenue, Apartment 1020, New York, New York, 10023. July 7th, 1982. Dear Mom, please come. I haven't been able to stop crying since the miscarriage. Monty doesn't know what to say to me anymore. It was a little boy. Did I tell you that? It seemed like a miracle that I was pregnant again, and we were so happy. Monty and I were so thrilled. How cruel of God to do this to us. How heartless and mean to build up our hopes and then bring us such pain. I didn't expect this, didn't even consider that I'd lose my baby. You never told me you miscarried. 3 times before I was born? Oh, Mom, how did you bear such grief? I feel empty inside. My arms ache to hold this child I'll never know. I feel lost and afraid of the future. The doctors told me it was normal to grieve, but I can't seem to let go of my son. I want my mother. Jillian. Card on floral arrangement sent to Jillian Gordon, Mount Sinai Hospital. Jillian, Montgomery, and Lenny Joe, I'm so very, very sorry. I love you. Call if you need anything. Leslie. July 14th, 1982. Dear Mom and everyone, hi. I thought I'd write and let you know that everything's all right here in Sacramento. Aunt Susan and Uncle Bill asked me to tell everyone hi from them. I thought Sacramento was on the ocean and that I'd meet some guys with surfboards. It's not. Did you know that when you sent me here? I'm really sorry to hear about Aunt Jillian and her baby. I guess you're right, and this probably isn't the best time to visit, especially with her mother there for the summer. We will visit another time, won't we? Actually, I don't mind so much, because this will probably surprise everyone. I've missed being home. I've saved almost all my money for school clothes. When I get back, I want to take everyone to dinner. A real sit-down restaurant, too, like Denny's. I bought a Culture Club cassette last week, but that's been my only extravagance. I think Boy George is radical. If you want, Doug, I can dress you like a girl, too. Just kidding. Has anyone heard from Dad? I wrote him from here and the letter was returned. What's up with him? I get home on Friday, August 20th. Who's going to come to the airport to pick me up? Will everyone? I miss you all. I didn't think I would, but I do. Love, Lindy. P.S. Christopher, would you like to see the movie E.T.? I'll treat if you buy the popcorn. Washington Driver's License. State of Washington Department of Licensing. Number. Knowles, star DJ459TK. Issue date, 092782. Expires, 09287. CDK, end, res. Sex, M. Height, 601. Weight, 192. Eyes, brown. Birth date, 092966. Knowles, David Michael, Knotty Pines Trailer Court Number 14, Pine Ridge, Washington, 98005. David Michael Knowles. Barbara Lawton, 2330 Country Club Lane, Pine Ridge, Washington, 98005. October 7th, 1982. My dearest Jillian, Montgomery, and Lenny Joe. I'm home and settling back into my normal routine. In spite of the circumstances that brought me to New York, I had an enjoyable visit. I miss you all dreadfully. The house feels empty without the sound of Lenny Joe's laughter. Jillian, this has been a hard summer for you with the loss of your pregnancy. Time is the great healer. It might be a cliche, but it's true. I'm glad you're wise enough to recognize this. Taking a 3-month sabbatical was exactly the right thing to do at this juncture. Learning to take care of your emotional needs is as important as anything physical. I learned that lesson after your father died. Grief, my children, is part of the healing process. When Leonard died, I didn't think I could possibly recover. We'd been married 45 years, and he was as much a part of me as my own hands and feet. I felt lost without him, abandoned and confused. Those first 2 years of widowhood were a challenge I don't care to repeat. I managed nicely once I found my balance, but it took quite a while. That sense of balance will come back to you, too. Be patient with yourself. Deal with one day at a time and be grateful for the beautiful daughter you already have. Montgomery, if you don't mind my saying so, you're working too hard. Jillian's been telling me this for years, and I agree with her. Don't make the same mistake Leonard did. Take care of yourself, will you? Lenny Joe, you're the most brilliant, beautiful grandchild in the universe. I don't know a single 3-year-old nearly as wonderful as you. I want to remind you how much your Grandma Lawton loves you. I miss reading to you at bedtime and cuddling with you during our afternoon naps, but I won't stay away long, I promise. Cheers will be on soon, and you know how much I enjoy that show. Mark my word, Ted Danson is going to be a big star. His co-star, Shelley... oh, dear, I can't recall her surname at the moment, but she's quite good, too. I'm looking forward to seeing you all at Christmas. Love, Mom. P.S. I liked Ann Tyler's Dinner at the Homesick Restaurant, which I read on the plane home. I'll give it to you at Christmas time. P.P.S. My land, what is this world coming to that people are tainting headache pills with cyanide? Whoever's doing this is a very sick person and should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. I only hope that Johnson & Johnson survives this mess. God help us all. Leslie Knowles, November 1st, 1982. Dear Buck, I don't make a habit of opening your letters to the children. You were probably counting on that. This latest letter, however, came with a Sitka County Jail stamp on the envelope. I hoped to spare them the knowledge that their father is currently incarcerated. How dare you blame me for your situation? I didn't do anything to cause you to be arrested or jailed. It wasn't me behind the wheel of that car. You were the one who got into an accident. You were the one with the high blood alcohol count. You landed behind bars without any help from me. It's time you accepted responsibility for your own actions. I've been angry with you before, and always with good reason, but you've sunk lower than I dreamed possible. I refused to send you money, and now you're asking your teenage children. It's bad enough that you blame me for your jail sentence, but asking David to send you cigarette money is unconscionable. From this point forward, I will be censoring all your mail to the children. You won't get a dime from me, and you won't get a penny from your son. As far as I'm concerned, jail is exactly where you belong. Leslie. Jillian's Journal. November 13, 1982. My dearest Nick, I watched the dedication ceremony for the Vietnam War Memorial on the news this evening. It's stunning in its simplicity. The black granite wall has your name engraved on it, along with those of the 52,000 other young men and women killed or missing in the Vietnam War. Each life lost is marked there. Each one will be remembered and honored. I'm so grateful, Nick. I don't want anyone to forget you or what you did. I hate it when I'm in Pine Ridge and someone mentions your name and then casually comments that you never returned from Vietnam. They don't know that you died a hero, and that because of you, other men lived. When I watched the news, Lenny Joe was down for the night, thank goodness, and Monty wasn't home. The tears and the grief came so fast and furious that for a few moments I was overwhelmed. I turned off the television and sat for a while, immersed in the memories. Oh, Nick, I loved you so much. I remember how I felt when my mother phoned to tell me your helicopter had been shot down and you'd been killed. At that point in my life, I'd never known such grief. It seems all too familiar now that my father's gone, too, and I've miscarried my son. But you, Nick, oh, dear God, how I've missed you through the years. My mother wrote last month soon after she returned home and said that time heals broken hearts. She's right, it blunts the pain and allows you to go on, to create a life. But it hasn't healed mine, Nick. It hasn't stopped me from loving you. It hasn't made me forget. I love my husband, but there have been nights, both before and after I married him, when I'd wake up, often in tears because I'd been dreaming of you. I've never told anyone this, not even Leslie. There's irony in all this. The newsman who gave the report was in Vietnam himself. His name is Cole Greenberg, and he's the man Leslie met in Hawaii. He's very good at his job, but I could see he was deeply moved by the ceremony. His facial expression revealed little, but his words came from the heart. He knows he's been there. He saw it with his own eyes. He lived the nightmare, too. I can't visit the Vietnam War Memorial now. I might never be able to stand in front of that wall without breaking down. It was hard enough saying goodbye to you the first time. Remember how much I love you, Jillian.
Leslie Knowles, November 20th, 1982. Dearest Jillian, I've been meaning to write all week, but this is the first free moment I've had. I can't tell you how eager I am for your visit next month. Save as much time as you can for me, will you? I need one of our good old-fashioned gab fests. This has been quite the year, hasn't it? A mixture of the good, the bad, and everything else. You've been in my thoughts almost every day since June, when you lost the baby. Then I read about the dedication of the Vietnam War Memorial and realized how hard that must have hit you. I've put in a request with Dr. Milton for time off the week between Christmas and New Year's. Following graduation, he gave me a substantial raise, which the children and I are putting to good use. I sold the trailer and paid off part of my school loans, as you know. After that, we moved into this rental home, and now we have an opportunity to purchase it. I'm thrilled. The owner has made the terms very advantageous, asking for a relatively small down payment. The place is in good shape, has a yard, and a convenient location. I'm so happy we can actually do this. All the kids are equally excited, and they're pulling together to make it happen. David is working 30 hours a week at the Albertsons store and still manages to get top grades. I don't know what I'd do without him. Lindy's a social butterfly, but she's adding her babysitting money to the pot. Doug has David's old paper route, and Christopher is walking dogs. Together, we'll have enough for the down payment and the closing costs. Lindy's attitude is a little better since she went away for the summer. She has a boyfriend, but at least he's in school, and as far as I can tell, drug-free. For her 15th birthday, she wants to pierce her ears. I never thought I'd agree to that, but I have. You've got to choose your battles, and this one's not important enough to risk our fragile truce. Can you imagine what the nuns would think if we'd pierced our ears? How times have changed. In our day, we were considered hussies if we rolled our socks down to show our ankles. We'd get kicked out of class for chewing gum. While now? Well, never mind. I try to spend extra time with Lindy, but that doesn't help. She'd rather listen to her music than talk to me. It seems she's never going to forgive me for divorcing her father. Perhaps someday she'll understand the reasons I left Buck. I want so much for her, and I'm so afraid she'll make the same mistakes I did. On to more positive news. Doug made the varsity basketball team, and we had a party to celebrate. He isn't as athletic as Christopher, but he shot hoops every night after practice. I'm really proud of him. I realize I'm talking about myself when it's really you I'm anxious to hear about. I know this has been a hard 5 months for you and Monty. Write soon, and take care of yourself.
You're the only best friend I have. Love, Leslie and the kids. P.S. I saw a bumper sticker the other day that made me smile. It said, God bless America, and please hurry. Hospital emergency room chart showing Montgomery Gordon heart attack. New York Hospital ER, 100 Madison Street, New York, New York, 10029. 212-555-5555. Date, 12-08-82. Time scene, 2100 hours. PMD, R. Lammers, MD. Chief complaint, chest pain, cold sweat, nausea. BP, 220-125. T, 147. P, 140. R, 12. Pulse OX, 92%. Name, Gordon Montgomery. DOB, 9-22-32. Age, 50. MRW, 1234567-89. Sex, male. Weight, 210 pounds. History of present illness. Onset timing, 2 hours PTA. Location, heart muscle, left arm. Quality, squeezing. Severity, severe. Duration, 2 hours. Context, reading at home. Modifying factors. Allergies? Current medications, ibuprofen, antacids. 1986. Jillian's Journal, January 1st, 1986. Dear Nick and Daddy, I'll just bet you're cheering up a storm in heaven, aren't you, Daddy? There's a Republican in the White House, inflation is down, and there's talk of eliminating the national debt by 1991. For the second time in my voting history, I chose to cast my ballot for the former Hollywood actor. So go ahead and gloat. This is going to be an exciting year. Leslie and I are attending our 20-year class reunion in July, and Lindy will be graduating from high school. Since I'm her official godmother, I plan to be at the graduation exercise, and I'll sit proudly beside Leslie. The dates are already written in my schedule, which I'm finding more and more crowded since I was elected to the bench last year. Nick, I'm sure Dad is being a real bore about that. You'll need to forgive him for being embarrassingly smug about his daughter, the judge. Dad knew, I swear he did, from the time I was 3 years old that I'd follow in his footsteps. Lenny Jo is the smartest 7-year-old in her second grade class. She's already reading at fifth grade level. Monty and I have resisted placing her in an advanced schooling program because we prefer that she socialize with children her own age. We take pains to make sure she's intellectually stimulated, both inside and outside the classroom. I'm still struggling with the conflict between the obligations of motherhood and career. I haven't found any easy solutions, only compromises. Monty's law career is still going well. Last November, he was approached about becoming a full partner. The heart attack in December of 1982 frightened us both. I have no desire to be a widow. And Monty doesn't intend to make me one anytime soon. I'm grateful to report that as of last February, he is physically fit with a normal cholesterol count. Whether or not he accepts a partnership with the Beckham firm is completely up to him. I'll support his decision either way. If he says yes, then I'll cheer him on just as enthusiastically as he encouraged me when I entered the race for Superior Court judge. I'm more in love with my husband every year. Monty and I have a good life. This isn't the passionate love I shared with you, Nick, but a mature love, one that developed slowly and steadily. Now that Lenny Jo is a bit older, we feel more comfortable leaving her with Mother, and when our schedules allow, Monty and I enjoy traveling. Mom is in her glory when she can spend quality time with Lenny Jo. That's a catchphrase of the 80s. I've come to believe that our daughter has given Mom's life new purpose. She's incredible, Dad. When we were in Pine Ridge last summer, she decided it was time Lenny Jo learned how to swim and decided to teach her at the country club pool. Before she knew it, Mom had a whole class of 6- and 7-year-olds. I think it's wonderful. Lenny Jo talks to her on the phone every weekend and misses her terribly. I'm so grateful they had 3 weeks together this summer. I was only able to see Leslie once this year, but we're as close as we ever were. She hasn't heard a word from Buck in almost 4 years. No real loss there. The last time he wrote, he was still in Alaska, in jail for reckless driving, reckless endangerment, and driving while under the influence. I understand there are also a whole slew of property damage claims against him. As far as I'm concerned, she's better off not hearing from him, and so are the children. David is attending classes at Pine Ridge Community College and working part-time for a computer store. He loves his job, and apparently the owner relies on him quite a bit. He told me recently that he'd like to design software. I'm not entirely sure what that means, but then I barely even know how to operate a computer. They certainly seem to be taking over the world, though. Monty swears by his and claims it won't be long before every home has one. That'll be the day. I remember when everyone told us we'd have settlements on the moon by the year 2000. It isn't going to happen. Space travel isn't for me, and neither are computers. Sometime this month, the Challenger is lifting off with the first private citizen aboard. A schoolteacher was chosen. Needless to say, I didn't apply, but what an experience. Krista McAuliffe will have a lot to share with her students when she returns. Now that interest rates have fallen, Jim and Angie bought a house. I don't think we can totally attribute lower interest rates to a Republican White House dad. Leslie and the kids have been in their house for almost 4 years. It took her so long to buy a home of her own, other than the trailer, that she takes care of it as though it were one of her children. The yard is immaculate, and the inside is decorated in a charming country style that is so Leslie. Yes, life is good, and I'm happy. Every year seems better than the one before. Monty and I have given up hoping for another child. I'll be 38 in a few days, and Monty is 54. But that makes us all the more grateful for Lenny Jo. Remember how much I love you both. Jillian. Barbara Lawton, 2330 Country Club Lane, Pine Ridge, Washington, 98005. January 5th, 1986. My dearest children, Jillian, I'm considering a major decision, and I want to discuss it with you before I proceed further. I'd like to list the house with a real estate broker. When the John L. Scott representative came today for what he called a walkthrough, he told me the house was worth over $200,000. Can you imagine? He suggested I list it at a slightly higher price to leave room for negotiations. My goodness, I nearly wet my drawers when he said what we could get for it. I didn't dare tell him that your father and I paid only $15,000 for it back in 1947. I suspect you're asking yourself why I'd want to sell the house now. First and foremost, it seems ridiculous to heat 3,000 square feet for just one person. The place is just too big for me. My friends told me not to make any major decisions the year following your father's death. I doubt that I could have. But it's been almost 8 years, and I'm finally ready. Jillian, I can hear you asking me where I intend to move. This might come as a surprise, but I'm seriously thinking about New York City, Manhattan in particular. To be a bit more specific, an apartment within walking distance of you. Having Lenny Jo with me for 3 weeks this summer is what prompted this. She's the joy of my life. The house seemed so dull and empty without her. The sound of her laughter faded from these rooms far too quickly. Now, I don't want you to worry that I'll intrude on you and Montgomery. I intend to maintain my privacy and will respect yours. I trust you know me well enough to realize that. I hope to hear back from you soon so I can make my plans. If you have any objections, I do hope you'll be honest enough to tell me now. I love you all. Mom. Park West Medical, 284 Central Park West, Suite 1A, New York, New York, 10024. February 10th, 1986. Dear Mr. Montgomery Gordon, the results of your blood work are back following your annual examination with Dr. Lyman. Your cholesterol count is 190. We look forward to seeing you again next year. Sincerely, Joan McMahon, RN. March 3rd, 1986. Grandma Lawton, I'm glad your house sold and you're moving to New York. There's an apartment for sale in our building. It's on the 5th floor. We live on the 10th floor. I could take the elevator down to your apartment, and you could take it up to see me. Love, Lenny Jo Gordon. Leslie Knowles, April 1st, 1986. Dearest Jillian, there is a reason I chose to write on April Fool's Day, and that's because I feel like a fool. While sorting through the laundry this afternoon, I found a package of birth control pills in Lindy's sweater pocket. She apparently got them at the Planned Parenthood clinic behind my back. Well, I suppose I don't feel so much a fool as a coward. I should have confronted her immediately, but I didn't. Instead, I poured myself a glass of iced tea, sat down, and cried. My daughter has lost her innocence, and it isn't just her virginity I'm referring to. She's sexually involved with a young man I barely know, and she's unwilling to discuss her situation with me. She's dating Carl Kennedy, and as far as I can discern, he's a decent enough young man. But the thought of them having sex just freezes my blood. Buck and I were sexually active my senior year, but the memories are not happy ones. As a result, I ended up pregnant with David. I love each of my children, but not one of the four was planned. Buck wouldn't allow me to take the pill, and at the time, I was struggling to be a good wife and a good Catholic. I sometimes think I fail on both counts. I wish Lindy had waited for the right man and the right time. I long to tell my daughter these things, but I won't. I can't find the words. The pill might prevent a pregnancy, but sex won't give her the love she craves or whatever else she's seeking. It will only complicate her life and possibly her future. Carl isn't any more ready for a committed relationship than Buck was at his age. Or me, for that matter. The first few years Buck and I were married, and for a long time afterward, I lived in denial. I became accustomed to ignoring ugly or difficult situations, like this one with Lindy. I was afraid to confront him the same way I'm afraid to confront my daughter. Because once the reality is acknowledged, you have to do something about it. I can remember nights when Buck would come home reeking of another woman's cologne. Although he disgusted me, I'd pretend not to notice. I got so good at that. So good at turning a blind eye to the truth. Because the truth was just too damn painful. Now I'm doing it again. Only this time my eyes are wide open and it isn't Buck I'm dealing with, but our daughter. As you know, Lindy has always been a difficult child. She was a problem even before she became a teenager. Even though there's been a slight improvement in her attitude in the past couple of years, she seems to think she can do whatever she wants. But she's still a child, still living in my home, living under my rules and under my protection. And Jillian, I do long to protect her. Which means I'd have to insist she own up to what she's doing. But I'm afraid of the consequences of a confrontation, just like I was with Buck. What should I do? Confront her, no matter how hard that is, or ignore what I found? Risk having her walk out or put up with behavior I find appalling? What do you say, oh wise and trusted friend? How should I handle this one? On a totally separate subject, I talked to your mother this week and learned she put down earnest money on an apartment 5 floors below yours. My fear is that once she moves to New York, you won't be as inclined to visit Pine Ridge. Jillian, if only you knew how much your visits mean to me. I don't know what I'd do if I didn't have that time to look forward to. I have some good news. Mom and Eric bought a Winnebago. They invited the boys to join them for a short trip this summer during the week of our class reunion. They'll drive down to Susan and Bill's place in Sacramento and stay there for a few days. You can't imagine how excited Doug and Christopher are. Doug will be 16 in August, and he thinks Eric might let him do some of the driving. Fat chance. Christopher thinks he might be able to persuade them to head from Sacramento to Disneyland. More power to him if he succeeds. I'm sorry I got so long-winded, but this thing with Lindy really upsets me. She's too young to be having sex. I don't want her to repeat my mistakes and my mother's as well. I don't just mean the teenage pregnancy. Thank God for the pill. But the tendency to get trapped in a marriage or a relationship that will stifle her at best, destroy her at worst. I want so much more for her. Write me soon. Leslie. 20-year reunion for Holy Name Academy and Marquette High School. July 18th to 20th. Holiday Inn, Pine Ridge, Washington, Friday Night Social at Tink Sports Bar, 2210 Pine Ridge Way, 369-7895. Saturday Dinner and Dance at Pine Ridge Country Club, featuring Dion's 60s Review Band. Sunday afternoon picnic at Lions Field, 231 8th Avenue. RSVP Diane Andrews Coleman, Leslie Adamski Knowles. March 1st, 1986.
Mom, you're being completely unreasonable. You leave me no choice but to move out of the house. I'm staying with Shannon and her parents until Carl and I can find a place of our own. I am not a child, and I refuse to let you treat me like one.
Lindy. May 2nd, 1986. English assignment. Christopher Knowles, grade 7. Why my mom is the best mom in the world. My mom is super cool. She does fun things. In the summer, in the middle of the night, she wakes us all up and takes us outside to lay in the grass and look at the stars. She calls these surprise pajama parties because we never know when the night sky will be clear enough. Then she gives us ice cream cones. One time when I was little, and my brothers and sister were in school and there was only mom and me, we had backwards day. We had a hamburger for breakfast and cereal at dinner time and dressed funny all day. Everyone wished they could be home with us instead of going to school. When my dad left, my mom volunteered to be the assistant coach on my soccer team. She didn't know the rules, but she learned them because she wanted to be part of my team. Twice a week, when she wasn't going to classes, she left work early so she could get to the soccer field in time for practice. Everyone loves their mom because they are their mom. I love my mom because she's fun, too. She's cool.
Leslie Knowles, May 7th, 1986. Dear Lindy, the choice to leave home was yours. I told you this when you left, and I'll say it again. You're welcome back at any time as long as you're willing to abide by my rules. Despite what you think, I'm sorry Carl broke up with you. Sweetheart, trust me. I know how much it hurts to have the person you love dump you for someone else. I really miss you, and the boys miss their sister. Come home, and we'll talk again without the anger and the threats. I think we've both learned a valuable lesson. I love you, Mom.
The class of 1986, Pine Ridge High School, announces its commencement exercises, Sunday afternoon, June 8th at 3 o'clock, invited guests only. Jillian Gordon, Montgomery Gordon, 331 West End Avenue, Apartment 1020, New York, New York, 10023, Bank of America, 16062. Date, 6586. Pay to the order of Lindy Knowles, $100. 100 and 0, 100. Jillian Gordon. June 10th, 1986.
Dear Mom, I'm writing because I want to thank you for everything. I hated it when I was away from home. I thought you were being unreasonable and stupid to demand that I break up with Carl. But I was the stupid one. You never even asked for an apology for all the ugly things I said. I do want to apologize, though. I'm sorry, Mom. You were right about Carl. I would never have been able to graduate if it wasn't for everything you did to help me catch up with my schoolwork. I feel so much better now that I'm home. I waited until after graduation to apologize because I didn't want us to get all emotional. I know forcing me to make a decision was hard for you. You might not think I mean this, but I'm glad you stuck to your guns. You're right. I was hoping Carl would marry me. I thought we'd run away to Reno or someplace like that, but he wasn't interested, and after a few days, I knew neither one of us was ready. I'd prefer to marry David Cassidy anyway. Psych! I was pretty upset when I left, but I appreciate that you gave me the freedom to make my own choices, right or wrong. I learned a lot about myself while I was with Shannon and her family. I always thought it was great that her parents let her do anything she wanted. But when I was living with her, I realized that what seems good from the outside often isn't good at all. I had a great party after the graduation ceremony. Thanks, Mom. I wish Dad could have been here, but I learned a long time ago that I can't depend on my father. Still, if I could change anything about graduation, it would be having Dad there. Do you think he got the invitation? Probably not, seeing that the last address we had for him was the jail. Love, Lindy.
Jillian Lawton Gordon, 331 West End Avenue, Apartment 1020, New York, New York, 10023. July 8, 1986.
Dearest Leslie, I know this is short notice, but I'm not going to make it to the reunion.
Monty hasn't been feeling well. He insisted I buy the airline tickets, but I told him I wasn't going anywhere until he saw Dr. Lyman. He went in last week and the test results are back. Monty has cancer. Even as I write the word, my hand is shaking. I've never been more terrified. My husband has cancer. Oh, Leslie, I don't think I can bear this. Monty is confident that everything will be fine. I'm not. I remember the first week I didn't get a letter from Nick when he was in Vietnam. A terrified sensation came over me at the absence of his letter. A premonition. I later realized I have that same feeling now. Dear God, I hope I'm wrong. I don't know what I'd do without Monty. Haven't I lost enough already? Please pray for us, Leslie. You're so much closer to God than I am. He'll heed your prayers far more than he will mine. Mom has been wonderful through all of this. She immediately took charge, sat me down, and made us both a cup of tea. Then she chatted on about medical advances these days and how I'm probably panicking for no reason. By the time she left, she had me believing that Monty's surgery will be no more serious than having a mole removed. It'll be followed by a series of chemotherapy treatments. The surgery's scheduled for the Wednesday before the reunion. I won't leave him. I know you understand, but, oh, Leslie, I will so miss seeing you. Please, please keep us in your prayers. I don't want to lose my husband. Jillian.
Dear Daddy, get well soon. I drew the picture of the flowers for you. I love you, Lenny Jo.
Leslie's Journal, July 21st, 1986. The reunion was wonderful, although it seemed odd being there without a husband or a date. I was a little intimidated at first, but as soon as I arrived, I started talking to my classmates, and before long, I forgot I was alone. It really didn't make any difference. As luck would have it, one of the first people I bumped into was Dr. Roy Kloster. His wife, the other Dr. Kloster, is pregnant with their third child, and they looked blissfully happy. Roy introduced me as his high school heartthrob. Bob Daniels asked me where Buck is. I told him his guess was as good as mine. I didn't pursue the matter because I had the sinking feeling that Buck owes him money. Bob tried to flirt with me, but I've never liked him and quickly made an excuse to talk to someone else. A lot of people wondered about Jillian. She was missed. Unfortunately, the news about Monty isn't good. The surgery was a success, but his colon was full of cancer, and it spread to several of his organs. The surgeon removed what he could, and as soon as Monty's recovered his strength, he'll undergo both chemotherapy and radiation treatments. Naturally, Jillian is worried. She said she knew this was going to be bad, and she was right. How I wish I could be with her. Despite my constant worry about them, I managed to have a good time. Several people asked me who I'm dating or if I'm available. I wasn't sure how to answer. This whole dating scene unnerves me. There's only been one man in my life. After Buck, I was terrified of getting involved again. I've definitely been scarred by my marriage. Anyway, taking care of my children is what's most important right now. I am certainly capable of living my life without a man. I've proved that from the beginning. I could never rely on Buck. When my former classmates pressed me about the dating issue, I told them I preferred the quiet life. Quiet? Not likely. I have four children at home, three of them teenagers. People who believe my life is serene would probably fall for any outlandish sales pitch. If I were to get married again, I'd want a man like Jillian's Monty. Or Jillian's dad. Or Dr. Milton, who's sane, sensible, and happily married. Or Susan's husband, Bill. See, they do exist. I refuse to think about Cole Greenberg. I built a fantasy around him, and I have absolutely no idea what the real man is like. All in all, the reunion was wonderful, but I missed Jillian. Jillian Lawton Gordon, 331 West End Avenue, apartment 1020, New York, New York, 10023. August 15th, 1986. Dear God, let's make a deal. Save my husband and I'll start attending Mass again. I'll sing in the choir, become a lay minister, feed the hungry, do anything else you ask of me.
Please, Lord, let Monty's body respond positively to all these horrible treatments. Don't let him be this sick when there's no hope. Cure him, Lord. I believe in miracles. Perform one now.